Hello and welcome. You're listening to Times of India Sports Podcast. We call this Sportscast. My name is Akash Dasgupta. I'm the sports editor of Times of India Online. And on today's episode, I would like to dissect and do a quick bit of a post-mortem, really, of India's ODI series loss against Bangladesh in Bangladesh, and also look ahead a little bit to the two-test series that's coming up against the Bangla Tigers. And joining me for this is someone, again, who needs no introduction whatsoever, one of the best-known names in Indian cricket over the years, former India captain Anjum Chopra joins us. She's, of course, currently in Bangladesh doing commentary for the series. So she's seeing things up close and personal as they unfold in real time in front of her on the cricket field. Anjum, thanks so much for joining us. Good to have you back on Sportscast again.
Thanks, Akash. Thank you so much.
All right. So let's quickly, first up, do a quick in a nutshell review of what you felt India's performance was like in this ODI series, because at the end of the day, it was disappointing, and that's really an understatement. I think it was a bit of a shock for most people for India to go to Bangladesh and lose an ODI series over there, and that too in the space of the first two ODIs itself.
I think I'll start from the second part of the question, that is a shock. I think the reason why everyone thinks that Bangladesh is a beatable side is just because Bangladesh hasn't done justice to their talent or their skill level over the past years or so. But that's outside Bangladesh, not within Bangladesh. We should also look at the fact that they are so formidable at home. And just when India lost the series, again, the reminder came through that in the last 12 or 11 series, they've hardly lost. I think in the last 11 ODIs, they've just lost one ODI. So, you know, that's the record for Bangladesh at home. And so if you start from there and say, which are the other teams? I've covered Australia also playing in Bangladesh. They've also struggled. India struggled. But that's the other part of the story. When we look at just the Indian team performing and for them to come out of a New Zealand tour again, but 11 players came in from India just for this series, which means they were not there in New Zealand. For them to come here and perform, I mean, everyone would agree that it's not too difficult to adapt because they were not adapting to New Zealand conditions, that they had to adapt to Indian conditions, barring a couple. In fact, those couple of players, whether it was Washington Sundar or Shreyas Iyer, they did well in New Zealand as well. So from that perspective, and looking at the batting lineup of India, you would feel that, you know, they have underperformed. And rightly so, they have. The wickets in Bangladesh are a lot different, but they're not so different that you can't adapt. It does take a few days, yes, but that's a skill level that I think Indian players obviously have. So yes, it's been disappointing that India didn't do well. I'll say the batting department let India down more than the bowling department.
Talking about the batting and the bowling, and if you can divide that, it's interesting that you're saying that you felt that the batters let India down more than the bowlers, because there were, in the first two matches in particular, there were phases when the bowlers were not managing to make breakthroughs, and at a time when it looked like India should be going for the kill and finishing off the game. But if you stick to the batting first up, if you look at the top five sort of run scorers in the ODI series against Bangladesh, it's a pretty much an even distribution. There are three Indians and two Bangladeshis, but that's also predominantly because Ishan Kishan came out and scored that huge 200 in the third ODI. So he's, of course, zoomed straight to number one. But overall, if you look at it, if you do a comparison between how the Bangladeshis batted and vis-a-vis how the Indians batted, of course, it's their home conditions. So, you know, they are very, very familiar to these conditions. But would you feel that a team like India, especially heading into a World Cup year, at a time when most of these players would want to make a mark for themselves and make an impression on the selectors, we are, of course, waiting for the new selection committee to be formed, but make a mark on the future selectors so that, you know, they know that these guys are there and performing. Keeping these things in mind, you would say that it has been an underwhelming performance.
Yes, I think, you know, another very important facet which is emerging is that most of the batters, when we look at our bench strength, when we look at who all are playing and vying for those slots in the playing 11 or in the top six, we'll see that everyone is a top order batter. You know, whether it's a Shubman Gill, whether it's an Ishan Kishan, whether it's a Rishabh Pant, Shikhar, KL, you know, Virat, everyone is just a topper. Virat is the only one who says probably I'll bat at number three. And KL can also bat. But again, if you just look at the opening slots and look at the options, including Shikhar Dhawan, we'll say, how many of these players are there, right, claiming probably a spot in the top three? Now, if you say Virat is at number three, then you say, who's going to bat at number four? So Shreyas Iyer obviously has a very nice record in batting at number four. And then you say, oh, who's going to be the wicketkeeper? So whilst I feel that we are having a very nice situation in Indian cricket where we have a problem of plenty, but somehow I feel we're not able to channelize it properly at this point of time. And I say that in the same breath that, you know, this situation that Indian cricket is in at this point of time is a very healthy one, because it's obviously started almost decade or decade and a half back that, you know, you start investing in your bench strength slowly, and with the Under-19 World Cup victory, just invest in them. And then slowly and steadily, India will have a nice bench strength, which it has now. But probably this is the next learning in Indian cricket that we need to have very quickly, is that once we have this kind of a bench strength, how do we manage it for optimum results? Because we didn't have this sort of a strength. Now we have it. Since we have it, how do we maximize it to our best advantage? Because it's right now not seeming like the best position for us to be in. You know, you can't have players walking in and out of an Indian dressing room or in and out of a series, because that's not worked up for us. And that probably is not giving us, the past has not given us the confidence that we can go with it in the future. So somewhere down the line, it's a situation which is there for the very first time in cricket at this point of time. And I'm sure this will be a very nice learning curve from here on. How we proceed forward is going to be a nice learning curve. And that's a similar situation, whether it's in men's cricket or women's cricket. Women have, of course, you know, that kind of depth is not there presently, but at least the pathway is defined with men's cricket leading forward. So yes, who comes in and who is the perfect fit, I think that time will only tell. With the World Cup around the corner, we've already heard the Indian coach mention that from January onwards, they will start tapering down and understanding exactly what are the players they want to go ahead with in the next 9 months. So I'm sure once that thought process comes out, whoever is the selector will be in sync with the think tank or the planning of the team management as well. And then only they can proceed forward.
Absolutely. We've heard, in fact, that BCCI is going to have a review meeting. And of course, it's called for after a series like this. And they will, of course, be talking to Rahul Dravid. They'll be talking to VVS Lakshman, who, of course, is the head of the NCA currently. And one of the things that also will be discussed, I think, is the way the Indian bowlers performed. Of course, this is at a time when there is no Jasprit Bumrah, of course, in the setup. And, you know, once he comes back, of course, things are going to change slightly. The ODI World Cup next year is going to be at home. So that's going to be an added advantage, of course, for Team India. But again, if you had to sort of dissect the Indian bowling in this series that we saw. Again, if you look at the top five, the top two bowlers are Bangladeshi bowlers. There's Shakib, of course, the veteran who's number one, and there's Ibadat at number two. I think both of them are tied on 9 wickets after the three ODIs. How would you rate India's bowling in these three ODIs?
I think Indian bowlers bowled well enough, because I think the first ODI was 186 what the batters got. So the bowlers, you know, you can clearly say that at least the health innings were there. I felt Bangladesh was too careful in chasing down that target. Eventually, they put more pressure on themselves. But on the other side, credit must go to Siraj, must go to Shardul, must go to the spinners as well. Shahbaz Ahmed also, because Akshar Patel wasn't available for that game. That they managed to contain or managed to put that sort of a pressure on the Bangladesh batters where they went under pressure. So I feel bowlers did a very good job in the first ODI. The second ODI, they got the 6 wickets and then they were not able to break that partnership of Mehdi Hasan and Mohammadullah. So whilst we can be critical of the fact that we have not been able to close down the game and, you know, get their wickets. But having said that, I felt both those batters batted well as well. It was predominantly a chanceless knock between Miraz and Mohammadullah. And that's an area which even Rohit said in the post-match interview that, you know, they would want to tighten things up from there on as well. So, you know, there are more factors leaning in the good side towards the Indian bowlers rather than the bad side. And having said that, again, 271, even if the bowlers were unable to contain, I think 271 was very much a chaseable target on that pitch. And we nearly did that as well. So I wouldn't be too critical of the bowling. You mentioned about Jasprit Bumrah. For Jasprit to come back to full fitness, to match fitness, would also take time. Yes, he is a very important cog in this wheel. But who bowls from the other end, who's a consistent bowler, Bhuvneshwar, Mohammad Siraj, Shardul Thakur. We have a lot of options in the bowling department as well. But who bowls along with the spinners that we are looking at? Remember, Ravindra Jadeja hasn't returned yet. So him, Jadeja and Bumrah are very important members in this lineup, along with Aksar, you know, there as well. So it'll be interesting to see. Yet, I think if everyone is still fit, we will still be talking about who's more match fit than the other. And, you know, that's how cricket has always been. And I think it'll remain like that only.
Absolutely. And if you look at the changes that have been brought about by the BCCI looking ahead to the test series now, because we don't have a Mohammad Shami, we don't have Ravindra Jadeja, of course, Saurav Kumar, like for like replacement for Ravindra Jadeja. Navdeep Saini gets a chance. And he comes in into the test squad for India. Your take on someone like a Navdeep getting a chance? Again, picking up from where you left off, that, you know, when it comes to the bowling department, there are just so many choices for you.
I think Navdeep comes in, especially because India A was playing in Bangladesh against the Bangladesh A team. So he's had a decent outing as well, along with Mukesh Kumar. Saurabh Kumar also had 6 wickets in the second innings, in the second game as well. So it's nice that, you know, they don't have to go back and they can be around the Indian dressing room. They can be around the Indian setup, because they're, especially for Saurabh Kumar, who's been around the dressing room earlier as well. But after a performance like this, you know, that just gives you a little more confidence. The support staff can work with these players as well. So for Saurabh, it's excellent. For Navdeep also, it's an opportunity to impress. Whether he makes it to the final 11 or not, that time will tell. But for Navdeep, because he's been away with injuries and he's come back. So it's a nice thing that, you know, he's coming along nicely. Because there was a time when Jasprit Bumrah was coming through the ranks. And we were talking about Navdeep Saini being there as well. We've got Mohammad Siraj being there, Khalil Ahmed being there. So a lot of seam bowlers were coming through. Now we're talking about Mukesh Kumar and other bowlers around as well. So there's an Umesh Yadav, there is a Shardul Thakur. There is going to be probably more reliance on the spinners as well as we get into the test match. But yeah, it'll be interesting who gets picked for the test match, especially for the first test match. But certainly the conditions in Chittagong or Chattogram would be a lot different to the conditions in Dhaka. So yeah, India didn't play 4 seamers in New Zealand. They played 4 seamers in Dhaka. So that was a difference though. But again, we have the options. So why not make the most of it?
Absolutely. Talking about things that didn't go according to script and didn't go well for India. One of them, of course, and it's become a big talking point, is where does Shikhar Dhawan go from here? Now, as you know, someone who's seen Shikhar up close and personal for so many years, you know, he is, of course, comes from Delhi, rose up through the ranks through Delhi cricket. And we all know what he's done for both Delhi cricket and for India cricket, and the value that he brings to the table. Whenever, you know, he's picked in a squad. Of course, when you're leading a team, then the spotlight is more firmly on you. And then when the leader is not getting the runs, if he's a batter, then, you know, there's obviously more chatter about it. He didn't have the best of seasons, of course. In fact, a very bad seasons for Shikhar. This one, highest score, I think, of 8 in the 3 matches. There is some talk about what happens to Shikhar vis-a-vis his ODI career, because this is the only format he plays. He doesn't play test cricket anymore. He doesn't play T20Is, and that's not because he doesn't choose to play. It's because he's not being picked. And there is that, of course, is a separate conversation. Should he still be in the reckoning, especially say in T20I cricket, because we know how effective he is still in the IPL, for instance. But when it comes to the ODIs, one school of thought is that because we have so many series now coming up, which are going to be home series, and all of them will have ODI cricket being played, don't take any knee-jerk reaction here. Let's see how he does in those series, and then let's take a call. The new selection committee, of course, still to be formed, still to come in. And the other is that because, and again, that is something which has perennially existed in Indian cricket. You know, someone comes and plays a good knock or takes 5 wickets and immediately this call of a chase squares the replace good. You know, so Ishan Kishan coming and scoring a double century, of course, fantastic, of course, knock by him. But immediately there is one section which is talking about how Ishan can be a great replacement for Shikhar at the top of the order. Where do you stand on that?
So I will just stick to the Shikhar Dhawan part of it, because I think the very fact that he has made his intention very clear and he's been open about it, saying that, you know, I want to be there for the ICC World Cup, it can be seen in any light. I see it as a positive light. At least the player is focused and wants to be there in the ICC World Cup. Look, let's face it, whether you're playing IPL or not, or whichever tournament you're playing, when you know that you're only playing one format and that format comes back in 4 years in the form of a World Cup, to remain relevant for that format is not easy. And not at towards the later part of your career. I'm not saying end of the career. It's a later part of the career. And let's not forget, from here, once the domestic cup, the two or three series that India would be playing against Australia, New Zealand, and Sri Lanka, there's the IPL as well. And he is the captain of his IPL team now. So the responsibility will be there on his shoulders. And I think it's a nice balance where Indian cricket, I mean, selectors, management can find, where by utilizing his experience, his learnings, and what the team requires at this point of time. You can't just go in with fresh legs. You want experience. We always hear of a sentence or an expression of youth and experience. And I feel Indian cricket at this point of time is there with youth and experience. So how we channelize that and use it to our advantage is definitely a discussion point, which I'm sure people who are there would be looking at it. I wouldn't say that Shikhar Dhawan has no place in this lineup. I'll still say keep him around. You should go with a bent of mind that, you know, Shikhar will be right at the top batting for India in a World Cup. That gives positive energy. That gives positive look as well to the team. And with Rohit and Shikhar opening at the top, I see no harm in it. These are our conditions. We know them. We know them very well. 3 matches not gone well for Shikhar. I agree there'll be questions. But then, you know, let's face it, if we have such question marks for players, and be it anyone, be it Ishan Kishan or be it Shikhar Dhawan, then it's really unfair, because we're really waiting for a player to fail to say he should not be there, rather than waiting for a player to succeed and say, look, he can add such quality. So I will still say that Shikhar Dhawan is an important member in this lineup. I wouldn't want to reduce the number of options for Indian cricket going towards the World Cup. I would want to keep more and more options. And the best person standing, the most fluent, the best informed, should get a go at the World Cup.
Absolutely. And like you rightly said, there is no replacement for experience. And that's what someone like a Shikhar brings, to the table. And if you, even if you look at, his average in ODI cricket, he's averaging over 44. And that is a healthy average, a very healthy average for someone who scored 106, has played 167 ODIs. In fact, in the list of most the active Indians, he's number 3 behind Virat and Rohit in ODI cricket. So, of course, it would be an absolute knee-jerk reaction if suddenly they decide to remove Shikhar just based on how he's done in Bangladesh, especially, like you mentioned, important year coming up in terms of the World Cup. And he himself has said that he obviously wants to be a part of that squad. The other part of that question was, of course, on Ishan Kishan. And wanted to sort of ask you about what you felt about his knock, because I read a very interesting quote of his where he said that I could have got 300.
Yeah. It was during the, I think, on-field interview in the mid-innings. So, which is nice. Look, again, I say, when you look at such quality of players around the Indian dressing room, you can look at the mindset of a player of Ishan Kishan's stature. He's a young player, comes through the under-19 ranks. I saw him in New Zealand playing the T20s, 2 games, batted really well, wasn't there in the ODI squad, comes back to India. Now comes to Bangladesh to play an ODI series, waits in the wings with KL Rahul donning the gloves and batting. And he doesn't know how is he going to get into this Indian lineup. Probably he's packing his bags and saying, fine, after 3 games finished, I'm going to go back and play domestic cricket or prepare. And then he gets a go because Rohit Sharma gets injured. So he comes to the ground 90 minutes early before the team's arrival. He bats in the nets, prepares himself, because there is no way that you can falter. And you don't want to falter playing for India. And at one opportunity he gets, he starts off cautiously and then rest is history. You know, if you can be a player leading a player like Virat Kohli in a partnership, that just says that you were in such a commanding position as a batter in that team. Forget India got to 400, but just the way Ishan played, it's brilliant. And to have such players around, I would never think of, discarding a player. I would always want to keep the best of the players in the mix and the setup, because that's the only way as a person who's selecting can have the best ones coming out rather than, so now there is no need to pick on hope. There is a clear cut performance where you can pick up players on. And with Ishan Kishan performing this way, we have a Rishabh Pant, there's a Sanju Samson. You know, there's going to be a KS Bharat in the test match. Whether he plays or not, this time will tell. But you can actually pick players on performance. So very happy to see Ishan Kishan hit that double 100. And again, for a batter to say that, you know, I was in a zone to score 300. Imagine there was, he was not even thinking who's bowling at the other end. He was just thinking, where am I going to deposit the ball? Which part of the ground am I going to hit that ball? So what a wonderful mindset to have.
Absolutely. And that in many ways is also the confidence of youth, I think, you know, that comes in whenever batters bat. Because it would be a very interesting study, Anjum, if you compared how, you know, Shikhar is thinking right now, having played so much cricket and knowing there's so much pressure on him, and how Ishan Kishan is thinking right now, because he really has no pressure on him. He just needs to go out there and, you know, express himself on the field. Sure. Talking about, you mentioned Virat and, you know, how the fact that Ishan was actually the leader of that partnership between him and Virat. Virat, of course, batting at number three, got another century. Now, of course, ahead of Ponting, now only behind Sachin Tendulkar on the all-time list of centuries. A quick word from you on Virat, the ODI batter, and the evolution that you've seen. Because this, in many ways, was his pet format. You know, for so many years, this was his pet format. This is where he picked up the tag of Chase Master. This is where he, you know, scored so many centuries. And then there was that, you know, I wouldn't say lean phase, but he didn't get those centuries or those big scores. Now he's getting those. So your take on the evolution that you've seen just in the ODI format?
We talk about probably evolution is because we've spoken about T20s so much in the last 12 months that we actually forgot there was a one-day international as well. That was a format which India played and Virat played. So I wouldn't probably dwell too much on it. I felt that he was, he started reasonably well in the first ODI, but then he got out playing a short, nice catch by Lytton, of course. Second game was asked to open. I felt probably it wasn't the perfect start that he had. And it can happen. So maybe the second game doesn't get counted. But the third one, I felt he started a little more. He was trying to force the pace. Very good, a very important reprieve from him because that was a sitter which Lytton Das dropped standing at short mid-wicket. And also the fact that probably Lytton Das, the captain of Bangladesh, could have persisted with the off-spinner Miraz for another couple of overs. Who knows? You could have got another wicket either of Ishan or Virat Kohli. So, you know, that miss allowed both the Indian batters to settle in. And for Virat Kohli, I felt because he was dropped, not once, twice, one clear-cut drop and the other one just fell short of the fielder. That was just the wake-up call. Once he got to a 50, there was no looking back. Because by the time Virat got to a 50, whether it was convincing or not didn't really matter. Because as a batter, you do also require an innings whereby things just go in your favor. Things went in his favor. By the time Virat got to his 50, Ishan was already 150. So from there on, the experience, the skill level is far superior for Virat to, you know, make a false move. It was a writing on the wall that he'll get 100. In fact, I thought he'll get more than 100, a bigger one. But yeah, Ishan was clearly the one who was leading the way. But that can happen. You know, you bat from either end. It's not about the senior player always leading the way and a younger one making, finding his feet. It's about the opposite also that can happen. I still see Virat as a very important player in this lineup. And as I said, even for Shikhar, it's not important to disregard or say, you know, say, let's have a replacement of a player, discard him and get someone else. He's an important member in this side. And you would want to go into a World Cup with Virat Kohli.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just the last couple of things that I wanted to talk to you about, Anjum. And one of the things is the entire concept of split captaincy. And again, there is some talk that, you know, maybe when it comes to Indian cricket, it's an open secret that Hardik Pandya is being groomed to be T20 captain. T20 captain, that he will take over at some point in time. When that happens, of course, is the million-dollar question. But are you a supporter of split captaincy, or do you think that it works better, especially for a team like India, where there are so many different components that the captain has to consider, which is not possibly true for some of the other teams, that one captain is best, because then he is in charge of all formats. He knows exactly what's going on in all formats. Of course, that adds tremendously to his own workload. But it's better that way to have one person in charge. Or would you feel that maybe sometime in 2023, maybe early 2024, you hand the baton over to Hardik and let Rohit remain test and move the agenda?
I think that also depends whether Rohit wants to play T20 World Cup or not, the next T20 World Cup, or is he seeing himself being a leader of T20 team? You know, if this question was probably, not just the question, if this thought was there probably 4 years earlier when Virat was leading and he was formidable in all formats, or even when Rohit, there were questions about why should Rohit become T20 captain. So probably if this discussion was there, I think it would have been disregarded because no. They are doing so well. We only want one leader. They are our leader. I believe in the concept that there is only one leader. I don't think that you need three different leaders. However, when I say this is also because as we speak in this generation, we know that, you know, when we put our trust in a leader, he obviously is skillful enough in Indian cricket to be playing all formats. You know, we've not had a leader in Indian cricket playing only one format or two formats. Players like Virat, Rohit, MS Dhoni, even prior to MS Dhoni, of course, there was not that much of T20. But if you look at these three captains, we'll say they're so good. They play all three formats. So why not just give it to him? Give it to just one person. So I also have that theory that give it to one person. But from here on, when we say that if by any chance Rohit Sharma is not going to be playing T20 World Cup, that is, then fair enough. You can give it to another person, whether it's Hardik, whether it's Rishabh, or whether it's any other person now or later, that call can be taken any day. And remember, whoever becomes a captain has to play that format right through and has to have a utility. So it's not just putting somebody as captain. You have to also ensure that that captain is there on the park every time. It's not missing games. It's not half and half performances. It's not sometimes I bat, sometimes I bowl, sometimes I don't bowl. It cannot be like that because that will come up as well. And it's an important part. From after that, after we've reached that stage, what is the schedule going to be like? Is it going to be too many T20s or just ODIs or test matches? I think that also the decision will also depend on that, whether you want two captains or three captains or just one captain. So everything will revolve around that. Just give captaincy, take it away from them, give it to somebody. It's not going to give us a World Cup win. World Cup will only give us, the World Cup victory will only come to us when we play well in all formats, in all departments. Otherwise, changing captains, we've already seen what's happened to Virat. Out goes Virat, in comes Rohit. We didn't still get the ICC trophy. Now out goes Rohit, comes in Hardik. What's the guarantee that we'll get a World Cup? It's not about captains only, it's about the team. When you're playing in a World Cup, we've seen that enough to identify that. I still believe there needs to be just one leader.
Right, absolutely. In fact, this makes me remember, I don't know if you remember this, that happened in the IPL, early stages of IPL, when John Buchanan was the coach of the Kolkata Knight Riders. Mm-hmm. And when he came up with the theory of separate captains for all three departments.
Okay.
Like a batting captain, a bowling captain, and
a fielding captain.
Yeah? Yeah. And I think Saurav was captain of KKR at that time.
Right.
So, I mean, most people that I talk to, of course, they feel that a single captain formula works better. Mm-hmm. Unless, like you yourself have said, if Rohit takes the decision not to be part of, say, the next World Cup, the T20 World Cup, and or cut down his workload and therefore give up T20 cricket, perhaps. Heading into a World Cup year, and this one is an ODI World Cup. So, of course, everyone's in the picture here. Heading into this 2023 World Cup year, would you rejig things considerably depending on how certain series go? Because, you know, India do have a packed home calendar now that the BCCI has announced is Sri Lanka coming to India, then New Zealand, then Australia. And the first away series that India play is going to be a tour of the Caribbean. And these three home series that India are going to play, all three have ODI, of course, because it is an ODI World Cup year. So it's been scheduled that way. But would you rejig things depending on how things go in these series? Or would you have like an overall look of things and say, you know, again, no knee-jerk reactions, please?
In terms of captaincy or team-wise?
No, in terms of forming the squad for the World Cup.
Okay. No, I'll have a clear-cut plan. And I won't be surprised if that plan is already in place because, you know, players haven't changed around. Players are there. The support staff is there. I would have already had a plan around probably 6 months earlier. I would reassess and relook at that plan today or going forward, and then go with that. Having said that, that's the master plan. You know, from the macro level perspective, I would obviously have that look, but also be open to parallel alterations, changes, opportunities that come the way as well. I don't think there'll be some new player coming in from a domestic cricket and being a part of the Indian team getting into the World Cup. It'll be these players, familiar names only. But I would just rejig them around if need be and go with that. Because irrespective whether I play at home, whether I play abroad, and in West Indies also, players would remain the same. It's about maximizing. And in totality, you get to play about 15 to 18 one-day internationals before, or maybe 20 one-day internationals before you get to the World Cup. So I would not do that. I would still have stick to my plan.
Right. And one other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, India might have lost the ODI series against Bangladesh, the men that is, but I have to say the way the women are playing against Australia in the T20I series, and we have to talk about that, especially the second match. The fact that, it ended in a tie and then they held their nerve so well against a team that was unbeaten across all formats this year. This is the first time they've lost in 2022. And that to do it in a super over. Of course, the openers did very well. Smriti and Shefali did very well for India. Your take on the fact that the series is now tied at 1-1 and it's a 5-match series, not a 3-match series. Do you see a chance for India here?
So, yes, there are two things to this. I would want, obviously, for India to win this series. Whether they win it 3-2 or whichever way, it's okay. As long as they win the series, number one. So, winning a series will give immense confidence to this Indian team. And it's always a game of confidence. We are aware of that. The second part is I would also want to reassess how my batting is progressing. Because each time when I go out there to chasing a score of in excess of 180, let's say, or 190, your openers will not give you this kind of a start each time. So who are the number three or number four batters? Having said that, I know because it's not going to be overnight changes that will happen in the batting approach or... But this is something of a work in progress. So the victory, the second T20 victory is going to give the confidence to the players for all their hard work that they have done in the last 6 to 8 months. So this victory is going to give them that confidence and that fillip that fine, they're on the right path. But job is not fully done. I still feel India would need to have options right at the top. Whether it's Shefali Verma opening, whether it's Smriti Mandana opening, Yastika Bhatia opening, or who goes into that opening slot, you need to have options. Each time hitting the ball over the park in India, in Mumbai, probably has worked. It's not going to work in every condition, and it's not going to work in India as well each time. A pitch at D.Y. Patil will be different to the pitch on the Brabourne Stadium. So if the start hadn't been there for India, then... Can a number two and number three or number three or a four, can they capitalize and provide that kind of an impetus? The other part of it is when you look at the bowling combinations, I'm happy that all three seam bowlers are getting an opportunity between Meghna, Renuka Singh and Anjali Sawhney, the debutant. For sure, Meghna Singh is still finding her feet in T20 cricket, but that's the best that we have so far in the mix. If she's not suited for T20 cricket, then maybe India needs to look at somebody else coming in. Pooja Vasrekar is injured at this point of time. And if that is coming around, then what are the options? Because for sure, it's a nice thing that India is playing with three seamers, even at home, because spinners' reliance is good. But when you're playing outside India, then you need those three quality seamers. So whatever is happening, whether the result in the first T20 went their way or not, or the second one, I'm still looking at how the team is developing into a team to play T20 cricket adequately and against different oppositions. So that's something that I'm looking from this series, the learnings from the past with this series, and then how India goes to South Africa, plays in South Africa before the T20 World Cup. So what are the changes? And these changes need to come about quickly for this Indian team. It's not only just about going and playing a T20 World Cup, it's how have you progressed from the last T20 World Cup to the 50-over World Cup, from the 50-over World Cup to this next T20 World Cup. How players are the same? How have you changed around? I think that's very important for me, how I'm seeing this team from the outside.
Absolutely. As things stand right now, it was really good to see the way they did not let go of things, because it can be quite a bit dominating and sort of intimidating when the opposition loses just one wicket, gets to 187 in a T20 match. The only wicket is picked by a spinner, not by a fast bowler, even though you're playing a number of fast bowlers. You give your rookie bowler a chance, but then you realize that, okay, going for 14 in one over, you know, and she bowled only that one over right now. But the fact that they didn't let go, the fact that they said, okay, 187, we can chase it down. They almost did. You know, so good signs those, and keeping our fingers crossed that hopefully we'll see more wins for Team India in this series. Anjum, it was always a pleasure really to talk to you, and thank you so much for taking up so much time and joining me again on TY Sportscast.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.